welcome to the Daily Reprieve, where we provide SA speaker meetings, workshops, and conferences in podcast format. We are an ad-free podcast. If you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and drop a dollar or two into the virtual basket. Please consider donating monthly by clicking the Donate Monthly button. However, one-time donations are always welcome. Just click the Donate Now button. Now, without further ado, this episode of The Daily Reprieve.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Max Sexaholic. Thank you, Jason, for having me. One of my favorite athletes is actually Australian, so big honor to be connected to Australia in some way. These were really great readings. You know, powerlessness and the understanding of powerlessness is the bedrock of the entire program. You know, they say that step one is the only step you have to do perfectly. I have a unique experience with step one because I've taken it several times for my first few years in program. As much as I thought I understood powerlessness, I was what they refer to as a chronic relapser. And as much as I thought I was done, lo and behold, I wasn't. And it sucked, because what was I doing wrong? What just wasn't clicking for me? What wasn't working? Why was I different? Most other people in the meetings that I went to, you know, were at least able to get months, sometimes years, you know, but I would get 2 weeks, a month slip, 2 weeks, a month slip. It was quite the roller coaster. And then I got some sobriety under my belt. COVID happened. That was a mess, but thank God, you know, I was asked to be here today, and I'm happy to be here and grateful to be here. Grateful to say that sober for the longest that I've ever been, and it feels good. It feels much better than not being sober. So one of the things a previous sponsor once related to me that really helped me was that I have to treat lust like a fire. And the same way that I can't play with fire, I can't play with lust. I can't use it. I can't work with it. I can't play with it. I can't touch it. I can have nothing to do with it. And sort of the insidious thing about lust addiction is that there are varying degrees of lust for me, in my experience. You know, there is sort of run of the mill lust on the street, and then there is much more intense experiences. You know, if someone is a heroin addict, there's heroin. That's the drug. That's that. But for me, there are ways that lust can slip into my life without me knowing it if I'm not present, if I'm not honest with myself. And I can very easily lie to myself that, oh, this isn't playing with fire, or this is a fire that I can control because it's not so intense. And I think that is one point that led to chronic relapsing for me, was the inability to, or the unwillingness to give up my right to lust in all forms. And I would let in these little bits, these little drinks, these little sips that would accumulate. And another insidious thing about this disease is that it's not always immediate. The result is not always immediate. If I let in lust today, I might not act out for a month, but it's going to be because of the lust I took in today. I might act out today, but I might act out in a month or 2 months. So it's sort of random in terms of when the ultimate consequence of my willingness to lust actually brings me to acting out. It's unpredictable. So I'm really better off just not lusting, because I might get away with it today. I might not. But even if I get away with it today, I'm not going to get away with it tomorrow or the next day. And that will lead me to acting out. And something very important about this fire comparison, that there's a lot of truth in that, you know, I personally, as an adult, I can use fire. I can light a match. I can light a candle. I can be around a campfire. I don't trust my 6-year-old with lighting a match. He won't intend to burn himself, but he inevitably will, because he doesn't know how to use this tool. And so too, there are people who can lust. There are people who can use it to their advantage, their benefit. They can enjoy it. They can sit around the campfire of lust and get on with their day the next day. Unfortunately, I am like a six-year-old. I can't be trusted to light a candle. I can't be trusted to deal with matches. I can't be trusted around a barbecue. I can't do it. And which brings me to my next point that, you know, sometimes people share with me that I don't want to lust. I know that it's not, I don't want to do, well, okay, that's great that I sometimes I don't want to lust, but sometimes I do. And what happens when I do? So I have to have a very fundamental understanding that it's not that I don't want to, it's that I can't, even if I want to. You know, the analogy that I thought of preparing for this is like, it's not that I don't want a very expensive sports car to drive, right? I do very much. I can't afford it though. It's not happening. And what would have to happen in my life right now for me to afford a sports car, the loan I would have to take out, the monthly payments, it's not worth it. It's not doable. So too with lust, I want to, I don't want to, it's not really relevant. It's that I can't. And the result of me lusting is a loan that I'm not willing to pay back. I'm not willing to pay off that debt. It's too much. The cost to me is too great. I cannot do it. You know, there are certain sports that I would love to play or certain activities I would love to do that, you know, whatever, I've had a few injuries in my life. I can't do that. The risk of getting injured is too great and I cannot participate in those things that I love. And it sucks, but I can't. So same thing with lust. I can't pin my recovery on how I feel that day, whether I'm feeling lusty or not lusty. And I don't want to, you know, yeah, I don't want to feel lusty or sensitive or anything like that, but that's not really up to me. That's up to God. That's up to the world. I don't really decide how I feel. You know, what I decide is what I do when I have those feelings. And I have to accept the reality that I cannot lust successfully. It always goes sideways, never leads to anything good. Again, it might take a day, it might take a month, but it's going to get there ultimately, right? And this last line in the first reading, until he so humbles himself, his sobriety, unless he is first accepted his devastating weakness and all the consequences, until he has so humbled himself, his sobriety, if any, will be precarious, that, you know, acceptance requires humility. I need to understand that I'm not God, that I don't run the world, and the world doesn't have to run in accordance with what I want. It's unfortunate. I wish it did, but it doesn't. And I have to learn how to find significance in my life in that reality that doesn't run according to my will. And I need to have the humility to accept the reality that I can't deal with lust, right? I need to get over myself. I can't take a sip, deal with it, right? And thank God we have a whole program, a whole 12 steps of recovery in order to deal with that exact very thing. What I also have to understand is that life is not stagnant. I can't stay the same. And the same is true for my disease, right? My recovery has to get stronger, stronger, and deeper and deeper because my disease is getting stronger and stronger. And a big part of me taking this program very seriously is I don't really want to find out what I'm going to do next. I know what I've done. I don't know what I'm going to do. I can take a few guesses as to where this disease might take me, but I don't really want to prove myself right. I don't want to do any of those things. And given the chance for lust to run wild in my life, I won't have a choice but to do those things as much as I don't want to do that. You know, I've had experiences in active addiction of me saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. I don't. And while I'm doing it. So my disease did not really care what I want or don't want. My disease is going to do what it wants to do. Therefore, my recovery has to not care what I want or don't want. I want to lust. I don't want to lust. I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling sad. I need to stay sober. That's first and foremost, most important thing. You know, the second reading flows very nicely from the first reading because I'm what some would call like a low bottom sexaholic. My disease has not progressed much farther than pornography and masturbation. Thank God I've not had extramarital affairs. I've not gone to prostitutes, all that with a big yet after them. But in some ways, that makes recovery a bit more difficult because one, the actual consequences of my actions, you know, I know people who they had to suffer the shame of getting tested for STDs. They had to, you know, tell their wives that they cheated on that. It's very rough. And relatively speaking, you know, consequences in my life were not quite as bad. So where's my unmanageability? My unmanageability is, one, I don't want to know what I'm going to do next. That's like, clearly I have a pattern that I cannot control this fire. I can't play with it. I don't know where it's going to go. And I don't want to find out where it's going to go. So whatever negative consequences I've experienced as a consequence of my acting out, it's only going to get worse. And I don't really want to test that. I don't want to experience that. My unmanageability also is very experiential. Thank God I'm married, I have kids, and the degree to which I was cut off emotionally and experientially from all of that, I kind of relate or make the analogy of like acting out and lusting. It's kind of like having a cheat code to life where other people have to go through these things, right? My wife and I, my wife is having a difficult conversation with me, but I have a backdoor escape. I have lust. I don't have to actually experience those difficult moments. I have a cheat code. I can just be impervious to all these difficult things in life. I don't actually have to experience them. I don't actually have to connect to anyone. I don't have to be vulnerable because everything can happen with this facade that I've created. Nothing actually has to happen to me. And that really negatively impacted every single area of my life, my marriage in particular, that I could not actually be present for a conversation. I couldn't have a difficult conversation. I couldn't even have a conversation over coffee. I wasn't a person. I was an empty shell of a human. All the guilt, all the shame, the double life, the lying, there's a big one. It's too much. And I don't want to go back there. You know, they say that you hit rock bottom when you stop digging. And that's it. You just don't have to dig anymore. You know, I wrote down here, some people have to dig to China before they realize, or I don't know what the parallel of that in Australia or India is, but you know, some people have to dig to China before they realize they're in a hole. Other people don't, right? I didn't, thank God. But I have to understand that I just have to put down the shovel because there's always further to go. My disease will not stay stagnant. And as long as I've decided that I am done digging, then, you know, I belong here. And sometimes there's a inferiority complex that I haven't acted out as much as other people. I haven't done as intense things as other people. But it says right here in the 12 and 12, right? As long as I see myself as going down that road, doesn't matter if I've been down it or I have reason to believe that I will go down it, then I belong here as much as anyone else. And there's always, you know, not always, but there's a very sinister voice in my head like, oh, well, you haven't done such bad things. So maybe you're not really sick. Maybe you're not really, maybe you're just, you know, you don't have a lot of willpower and maybe you don't need this program. And even if you do, are you really done? Maybe you should go and do more things, all the cool things that, you know, you heard about in the stories from other members that you never got to do. And that's a very sinister and insidious voice. And I can't listen to it. I tell it, thank you for sharing. And I have to go on with my life because right now recovery is working. Right now, life is good. Thank God I have my difficulties and that's okay because I would choose these difficulties over the difficulties during active addiction any day. You know, there's a funny NA talk I heard once where a guy's sponsor was complaining to him, you know, after a month or two of recovery, like, man, I don't feel good. And his response was, well, I never said you would feel good all the time. Trying to feel good all the time is how you got here in the first place, right? And it's just such a, I don't know, prophetic, but like so significant because it's so true that I got here because I didn't want to feel bad, even though the very thing I was doing to not feel bad was making me feel worse. And then it was, you know, just this vicious cycle of trying to use the same thing to get a different result, insanity, all that. But I have to accept life on life's terms, and any stumble or slip or fall, any bout of acting out during recovery that I did, I don't remember every single one, but it was some semblance of not wanting to accept life on life's terms, on wanting to feel good. And if I feel good, wanting to feel better. If I feel bad, I want to feel better. Sometimes I want to feel worse. You know, I want to punish someone else. So I'll act out because, you know, that'll show them, even though they won't know what I did. Like, I've just found the most insane reasons to slip or to delude myself into thinking, oh, all I need is like a little bit of lust and then I'll be okay and I'll be satisfied and then I can go on with my life. Like, look, I could take a shot of alcohol, no problem. So I'm very grateful I'm not an alcoholic. Sorry if any of you are, but I'm not. I can drink freely and I can stop and not think about it again until the next time the opportunity arises. It's not going to eat at me. Experientially, in my history, lust is not that way. I cannot just have a shot, so to speak, of lust, because then, you know, I'm going to want more and more until I get bored, and I'm going to want something more intense, and then I'm going to get bored, and I'm going to want something more intense, and I'm going to try to find these pockets of time in my day where I can fit in some pornography, some whatever, until it just eats up my whole day. That's all I do. That's all I think about, planning when I'm going to act out next. And I don't want to live like that anymore. I don't want to experience the feeling of just that unproductive day of doing nothing. It really wasn't fun. So I guess I have about a minute and a half left just to, I guess, go over the main takeaways of my rambling, or the main points that I tried to touch upon, is that me with lust is a 6-year-old with a match and a matchbox. Right. I cannot safely use it. It will burn me. It will destroy me. I can't interact with it. I can't play with it. I can't enjoy it. I can't. It doesn't matter if I want to. It doesn't matter if I don't want to. Entirely irrelevant. I just can't. That is the fact of life. That is the fact of reality. The extent to which I can accept that and not fight reality is the extent to which I will be able to choose sobriety and to choose recovery. That's all I got. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for letting me share.
I would like to thank you for listening to this episode of The Daily Reprieve, the best source for experience, strength, and hope for SA members. Please subscribe to this podcast to be alerted of new episodes. Please show your support by donating to The Daily Reprieve by going to donate.thedailyreprieve.com and choosing either monthly donations or a one-time donation by clicking Donate Now. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode of The Daily Reprieve.